This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Jetson's there, Billy did! The goal, Chris Billy Huddersfield Town! The most famous goal of Chris Billy's life.
Is this the moment for Lee Fowler? It is. Take your place in Division 2. Huddersfield.
Oi. Thank you.
Rupi and Steve Simonson's boots now. He's missed. Steve Simonson clears the frame of the goal and collapses in a heap of tears. Huddersfield Town are promoted.
Christopher Schindler has a chance to write his name in Huddersfield Town legend. And he takes that chance!
Hello and welcome to episode 201 of the Andy Takes That Chance podcast. This week in HD1, social media in the nose are doubling down on Paolo Bianco being a frontrunner for the Huddersfield Town job, despite former Terrier blog writer Bloggy Potter admitting that he made up the rumour due to boredom while straining one out on the toilet. Money has come flooding in despite the rumour being flushed away. Elsewhere, there's Harat in the bookies. What are Town going to do? Worthy's change of mentality sets the pulses racing with a gallant performance at St Mary's. And Duffman can't move, as Alan Nixon claims Town will appoint Michael Duff should he move to the local area. Joining me to look back into the last week's news, we have the Brian McDermott of the podcast. It's Richard Cossey-Cosmala and Ian Rude Van Silkelroy. And I'm Matt Shaw. Good evening, how are we doing? And good evening to the live YouTube audience as well.
Evening, Matt.
Are we all right, boys? Yeah, good. Not much coming back then. Right.
Not from Killer.
Okay.
We're all right, Matt. There's only us. I was just thinking today, we're going to do a podcast and we're happy. We've lost. We've let in 5 goals and we're happy. That, don't they think that just sums up Huddersfield Town? We are happy.
Know. I'm writing jokes we've in lost the intro 5 and
goals.
Everything.
We've conceded 5 goals. We've lost again, but we're quite happy.
Just easily pleased. Because it's easily pleased at this point. That's all it is.
Niche audience, this girl, isn't it? Niche market, mate.
Yeah. Anyway, this episode, as always, is sponsored by the wonderful Magic Rock Brewing. So get on to www.magicrockbrewing.com. Use our code of AHTTC10 and you will get 10% off all of your online orders. Head down there as well for match day. Because it's pretty good. And they have some decent stuff in the old food trucks as well, if you're a gluttonous for food like me and Cozzy and Killer. Right, let's look at Huddersfield Town travelling down to Southampton. Southampton 5, Huddersfield Town 3. What a performance this was for 80 minutes. Unbelievable. I just want to talk about DNA. I don't mean to go all Jurassic Park on you or anything, but Town DNA. We hear this quite a lot, don't we? I'm going to use Michael Duff as a bad example. So, I think Killer Cozzy, in the summer, you may remember I was quite pro Duff to replace Neil Warnock at that moment in time, and he ended up getting the Swansea job. And I remember getting the Swansea job and saying to anyone on WhatsApp who'd listen, it's a really bad fit. Is that you've got a guy who doesn't really, he's a great out of possession coach going to a club who seem to think they're Barcelona light and want to play, you know, tiki taka football. And you've just appointed Michael Duff, who's not going to deliver that. Roll on to Huddersfield Town, and we've appointed Darren Moore, who prefers the slow build up, you know, and everything that comes with that. Town's DNA, look how happy, you know, the general consensus is online. You know, you read the message boards and Twitter and so, you know, other social media. And Town fans, we lost the game, but generally the underlying narrative is they're quite pleased with how Huddersfield Town have played. And they're quite pleased because we've attacked with pace, we've pressed high, we've excited, we've got in the opposition face, and we've moved forward with speed. And I think that's all Huddersfield Towns want to see. And, you know, we talk about DNA and how Huddersfield Town should play and the next manager that comes in. And that's really what we want. And it's really why a lot of people fell in love with the David Wagner style. It didn't really matter that we moved the ball quite slowly. It was more off the ball. We pressed, we harassed, we got in people's faces, and we didn't really give much of a shit who we were playing. We would just attack and we would have a go at teams until later on in the Premier League season. And that was what it felt like, didn't it, yesterday under John Worthington Killer. I mean, it's really sort of, it's an antithesis to what Darren Moore was playing, like I said, but we started brilliantly, and it's the type of pressing, isn't it, that we were doing. You know, Matos starts it from midfield, doesn't he, with... He's really been excellent the last two games. You know, you bring in someone like Matos, and Darren Moore gets him and has him sat, you know, sort of deep, whereas John Worthington's looked at him and gone, this, you know, he can really snap into tackles and get moving, and he's put a lot of faith in him to start that press from midfield. And then Town were boxing Southampton in. Southampton very much all about, you know, the close 5-6 yard passes, moving, you know, intricate style, but Town sort of nullified that really well, Kill, didn't they, in how they sort of boxed Southampton in and snapped in, and it was good to watch, wasn't it? And you could understand, couldn't you, that we were set up to hit with pace, and that's why there was no place for Bojan Radulovic in the team. But I loved it, mate. It was just, usually when we play and I watch it, I'm just sat on my phone half the time, just like messing around, and then look up and then watch it for 5 minutes, mess on fun. I couldn't take my eyes off this, mate. I thought it was great, and especially the pressing as well. That was what really caught my eye.
Well, I'm the same as you, Matt, there. I was like out and about yesterday running a few jobs, trying to get back home for 3 o'clock so I could try and keep tabs with it. But the day kind of ran away with me a bit. The next minute I'm looking, it's 2-0. I'm thinking, what am I missing out here? So I got back home as quick as I could and watched it a bit on delay to see how the game went. But in regard to the DNA stuff, you're right. I think it is as direct opposite to Darren Moore as you could possibly get. That the first time Southampton got it at the back line, I'm waiting, just naturally waiting for us to kind of low block it again, just to drop back. I know Worthington spoke about being not wanting to play like that and whatnot leading up to the game, but I just expected it, right? First time, as soon as the goalies got it, we've got like four men pressing their back line. And you could see straight away Southampton think, eh? No one comes here and does this to us. And it shocked them, and it shocked all of us, I think. It's amazing, like you say, Alex Matos is the prime example of how this entire shift has gone about, in that now we've got a guy whose job it is to be that first line of press after the strikers. And Alex Matos, to me, I haven't seen him under Darren Moore. Like you say, I thought he was just a defensive midfielder that didn't know how to go into tackles other than just to launch himself in. And all of a sudden, he's been given these roles where he's the most important part of the press for us. It's really refreshing to see Worthington go about it that way. And I think that's all that Town fans want. They just want a hard-working team. Like I say, it doesn't actually matter what the style of football is, as long as it's hard-working. And yesterday, that first 45 minutes especially, everyone busted a nut. They were all at it. And I think even if we'd been losing at half-time, it'd have gone down pretty well. Similar to the first Wagner game, that was it Middlesbrough that we lost against, I think, when he first came in.
But it's just Jeff that. It was just Middlesbrough at home, yeah.
Jeff Wednesday then went Middlesbrough. The Middlesbrough home game was when everyone kind of just noticed, wasn't it, Matt?
Yeah.
And there were just moments of it like that yesterday where you kind of just thought, do you know what? Yeah, this is the town that we've been missing.
Cozzy, I think Killer's frozen there, but we can still hear him. Cozzy, were you like us watching that game? You know, we saw the WhatsApp messages, but you were pretty buzzing as well. I know it sounds really strange, doesn't it, to be sort of buzzing after a defeat, but you can see a direction there, can't you, that Town should really follow up on.
Mate, when you go on a Saturday to watch your team, no matter what level it is, you just want to go there with that the team's giving in their all, they're wanting to win the game, and just no regrets, you know, that, and that's like you just said, Matt, we've been, well, the killer there, just like we've been starved of that for four or five seasons. And yeah, it was so refreshing. And I think it were really funny as well. Like the, honestly, the Southampton commentary, I remember praising it before in the home game. I don't know why I want that, the game, I must have been away or something, but absolutely fantastic. And Dean Hammond were there to co-commentate, and they were stunned. They were absolutely stunned because I think they're just used to, I mean, it's just common, isn't it? You got St Mary's and get rolled over, you sit back and eventually just, you know, you're happy to lose two or three, where I think it's only us or Sheffield Wednesday, I think, from what I can gather from down there, some of the feedback that Southampton fans were giving that have come and had a go. But it was absolutely refreshing, man. It was quite thrilling, really. But I was sat there thinking, this is just like, you know what I'm like, watch all my continental football, and there's certain teams who you're watching at the moment, just like so exciting. You know, when you're tuning, mate, you're gonna get an exciting afternoon or evening and what have you. And now I'm thinking, wow, this is like Huddersfield Town here, going to Southampton. And I was trying to kind of, honestly, sometimes it's like, I don't know why I do this, but it's like I'm thinking, well, what do you expect? You know, that you had nothing to lose as a caretaker manager. You know, you might as well do this. But I'm thinking, but no, it's just so brave, because on the back of that, and then obviously you've got this midweek game coming up against Sunderland. I think it's so easy to like just go a different way. But the bodies forward, the thing was so impressive to me, because I think we were like a back five at the start. But like every time we were broke, we were going well. And Kazuma were like a flying wing away, like up the side. And oh, we've got to have a section on Brody Spence. I haven't seen your agenda, Matt, but if Brody Spence isn't on the agenda, there's something wrong. But we look good.
If you check WhatsApp, bud, it's in there.
Yeah, we're just refreshing. But again, it just goes back to the kind of that tweet I put out last night. It's just like, you just want to know, especially when you've gone, the 700 fans went yesterday, didn't they? Paying ridiculous money now. And you want to know that your team's going to try and win the game. It don't matter who it is. Like you said, Wagner, exactly that. You knew we were trying to win, and it was just so, so refreshing. The best thing about it was we didn't get the luck early on. I mean, we'll talk, obviously going to dissect the game in a bit with penalty Caroma, but Eds didn't go down. We just like carried on, and we got what we deserved, and you couldn't argue. Maybe two were a bit harsh for Southampton, but to be up at half time, it was like dream world. But for me, it wasn't what we were doing, because yeah, we could have got two set pieces and gone 2-0 up and you know, done the usual. And I had to check today. I think we had, in the first half, we had like 20, again, a possession. We didn't have much possession, but it felt like we had like 60%, because you're just not used to seeing it. And it were like, it was just so good. But the energy levels were brilliant. And you look back and you're thinking, because it's funny, because stats can like just, they were saying, oh, Huddersfield on the back of 4 unbeaten. It sounds really good, doesn't it? If you've been honest, like, yeah, 1 win against Wednesday and 3 barring more draws. But it's like, it were just, what were it, 20, 15 minutes against Sheffield Wednesday? That's all it was built on, Matt. And it was just like, I mean, I watched the Worthy press conferences. First time, I didn't watch his one last week. I was away and just saw the tweets and stuff. And I kind of went to you. I thought it was a bit naughty with the, you mentioned last week, you guys on the pod with Matty Pearson comments and Worthy comments, the shackles and stuff, because I had that thrown at me, because I was like, you know, kind of, I'll be honest, I messaged you, didn't I, after I'm going to shift for Wednesday when we were poor and the shackles are off, guys. And then people were like giving me it back, like that aged well, didn't it? You know, because obviously we got four. But it would, John Worthy at his press conference, I think it went on for about 7 minutes, Matt. Obviously, it covers Kaffa Nana, Stephen Chicken, and Leon at the end.
Leon, wasn't it?
Because you don't mess about. It's just like, it just, you know, when Moore just talks all them words and bores everyone to death, he were like, you know, Reece Ely. No, he's not going to make it. It was just so refreshing to have like that honesty. And I get everyone's different, and yeah, he might not want to show his hand more, but it was just proper. It was just good, though, mate. It was just, I could link into it on a Friday dinner time or Thursday, I think, when the press conference won. I was on board then, and it wasn't a matter that we beat Wednesday. I just think sometimes, like someone, I don't know if it was you, Killer, someone said about Moore, he tries, I think it was Johnny actually, he tries to make it like complicated, or tries to come across as like a Mourinho and stuff, but don't fool us to a public. Just keep it simple, mate. And he did his press conference, and his team just went out. It's pretty simple, isn't it? 11 against 11. I know they're 20-odd unbeaten, but it was absolutely refreshing, Matt. And at half-time, it was just like people were texting like Leeds fans to me, like, what is going on? It says, mate, this isn't like a smash and grab. This was deserved, but obviously it went wrong at the end. But there's not many clubs that would lose, concede 5 goals and lose. But pretty much 99% of the fan base were put in. It's just odd, but it was so thrilling, mate.
You mentioned Johnny there, and I have to throw some shade his way. He's currently not on the podcast tonight because he wants to watch that BTEC rugby sales and marketing event that's on Sky at the minute, which is an absolute bag of crap. But, you know, so shame on you, Johnny, for not joining us tonight. So let's talk about the goals. The first goal's great. It starts at the back, doesn't it? It comes out from the back. I think Southampton actually play it quite long, don't they? And Kasumu wins the header. And it makes its way out to Sauber Thomas, who hits a great crossfield ball. And then Jack Redoni puts the cross in. There's a dummy from Caroma and the finish from Sauber Thomas. A bit of a strange one, really. He kind of almost bobbles it in, doesn't he? And the keeper's a little bit late down. But it's such a great move for the goal. It was great. It comes off the back of Town. Probably should have had a pen as well, cos.
Yeah, I just think it's a difficult one to give, though, that, innit? Because I just think you wait Southampton. It's a brave ref that gives it. And it were kind of right on the kind of the goal line as well, wasn't it? With a few bodies in front. But it, I think it's one of those, you first saw it, you thought, oof. But I'm sure of the way that gets given, Matt. But it's, I felt a bit harsh, did that. And they're so honest with the Southampton commentary. Absolutely fantastic. They were like, that's a penalty. And Club TV don't normally be as biased as that, does it?
But no, they're the best. They're the best I've, by a mile, I've mate. Heard.
Ian Wilding, I think his guy's years, name. Yeah. I DM'd him just to praise his, because he must get a lot of, you know, stick for his commentary. But he just refreshed it and he reeled off so much, didn't he? Like, you know, all about his players, Boreham Wood, that Thomas come from.
He was brilliant, yeah. He was brilliant.
But basically, we're two guys who were just enjoying a game of football because they expected, like we all did, that it was just going to be a boring 2-3-0 Southampton. Also, we're going to sit back and kind of, you know, take it easy, damage limitation. And basically, they were just like thrilled by the afternoon. And we've had a few Southampton fans, haven't we, coming on our, a few came on my Twitter last night, just like, guys, just, they got the game. I love what you did. You'll stop up. Fantastic. What a game. Sometimes, I know we want to win and sometimes the pressure of the league table and blah, 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 but it's entertainment business is football, isn't it? It's just a escape from their normal working week and it was just absolutely thrilling. I absolutely loved it, but going around in a tangent, but back, yeah, we should have had a penalty, Matt.
Yeah. Killer, you tell us about the goal, break the goals, the first two down, because the second one as well is another great goal. I think Brody Spencer does quite well on the left, and Sauber ends up going down to Sauber. Sauber's been superb this season for me, and he looks up and plays the ball across, and Kasumu absolutely flying up that flank, smashes it in off the bar, and it's dreamland, isn't it? Those two goals were fantastic, and as Cozzy says, that they're not lucky goals, the brilliantly constructed goals as well for the most part of it. And we deserved it. We were phenomenal that first half. And that's probably, I reckon, the best half from a Town side in years, really, for in terms of, you know, you can look back to Corbrand and say, in terms of structure, solidity, and seeing games out and getting in front, Corbrand had, you know, there's a lot of good football there. But in terms of excitement and being off your seat and putting your phone down, Matt, you know, that kind of stuff. It's up there, isn't it, with sort of the best halves for a long, long time.
Yeah, I loved it. And both the first two goals, you can see these elements of game plans within the goals as well, which I love to see. Not just a fortunate goal. You can kind of see Warnock did it. Every time we attacked, you could tell that there was a plan there. And you could see it. And Worthing has only been in the building, what, a week at this point? And we already look so much more, not only clinical, but quite creative when we are going forward. And this is from a midfielder, not someone who you'd synonymously suggest to be that kind of a coach based on his playing career. But that for the first goal, man, it's by design, isn't it? We're pressing high. We're saying, right, you can't pass through us. You're going to have to go long and try and beat us in the air. So they've gone long and we've won the ball, right? Three quick little passes. I think Radoni's in there. And then they send it to Sauber Thomas, who had an amazing... Honestly, he plays as like a free-roll winger. It's like we've just allowed him to do kind of what he wants to do. And because he's the best creative outlet we've got. And he's really taking it by the horns and running with it. But he's a nice little switch ball, like you say, Matt. And then we've run it down the wing and then a nice little pullback. And then Caroma's got a bit of a dummy run there as a centre forward. He's literally dummied it for the first goal. But by design, again, he's taken out a centre back by running towards goal. So when the pullback comes there, these Town players running onto it with a clean shot at it. If Kasumu don't put that away, Alex Matos is behind him to have a clean shot at it as well. Sorry, for Thomas, if you don't finish it, Matos can. And for the second goal, like you say, Matt, similar thing again. Okay, it happened in a bit of a different way because Radoni heads it on to, I think, to Spencer. And then Thomas gets on his bike, he gets the ball and sets off with it again. And that's another difference that we've got now under Worthington than we had under Moore. You can see if anyone gets it, Radoni did it quite a few times yesterday as well. As soon as the ball comes to the feet, they're turning and they're running with it if the opportunity is there. And it just drags us that 10, 15 yards upfield and create so much space because, again, Southampton have to adjust at this point. Remember, at home, they're used to seeing teams come and park the bus against them. It's boring. You can watch any Premier League game of a top six club playing one of the bottom teams and you know what you're in for. It's boring. It's not what you want to watch. Southampton will have expected that to happen yesterday and it didn't. We set up not over back five. I thought initially, Matt, it were a back five, but it wasn't, was it? We're back three. It was like
3-4-3, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But a legitimate one, because normally it's not, is it? Normally, like you say, your wing-backs are so deep, it's a fraudulent way to say it's a back three when it's a back five. But yes, they just went at it, and they just didn't know what, they just couldn't handle it. They're not used to that. It was an arrogance that they're not used to it. They adjusted after half-time, and we'll get onto that in a little bit, but at the beginning, we're running with it. Again, he cuts it back, Caroma. He's not entirely near the ball, but again, he's taking a centre-back, and he kind of wrestles into the ground to leave the ball there for Kasumu to put it on first time. But again, Matas is behind him. Again, you can tell Matas is told, if he's going down one wing now, to get to the edge of the box. If you watch him back, you'll see exactly what I mean. It's just nice to see. What a wonderful, well-worked goal by design instead of a set piece. That's all we've had all this season. It's just, it felt in that up until that point that Southampton were shell-shocked and we took full advantage of it by design, by running at them. Again, Sauber Thomas, every time I've seen him up until the last couple of games this season, Moore's told him to go out wide and cross it in. Now he's narrow. He's narrow and running towards goal and pulling it back and just being a little bit different every time he gets the ball instead of just whipping it in. And teams don't know what to do. Southampton weren't ready for it and we took full advantage.
Jonathan
Hoggett. Go
on, sorry, Matt.
What I loved was bodies in the box. I was going to say Hoggett. Even Hoggett was Hoggett up there on the edge of the box. But bodies in the box, you look at those first two goals and there's like four, five, six players in and around the box, you know, ready to, you know, be available for the shot. And that's what I loved when, you know, don't really want to double foot Darren Moore or anything, but under Darren Moore, Mark Fotheringham and other managers, not Neil Warnock, you would have had like two players max in the box, you know, and one of them, Sauber Thomas, you know, crossing it, you know, on that second goal. And that's the difference, is it? You're getting players forward and then you're getting players back. You know, that it was just great. I absolutely loved that half. Unfortunately, Southampton did roar back at the start of the second half.
Well, Matt, just before we say that, Flynn Downs obviously went off after 33 minutes. And then, I mean, we didn't mention our team news, but you messaged me, you said we've got two keepers on the bench. I'm like, Alex, you must have read that wrong, Matt. We have. It's like, and then obviously Tom Edwards, their bench, like that Sulamina, 21.6 million. That Adors is 6.8 million from Manchester
City.
Ruining the
agenda again, isn't he?
I've ever jumping head, but yeah, you didn't go through the team at the start, that's why. But yeah, just
it's insanely good, isn't it? That Southampton team's insanely good. If Flynn Downs goes off injured, that you don't bat an eyelid. If Mikhail Helic's injured for us, you're like, oh shit, who's going to come
in with that goal at second
half?
Matt Pearson
was. All right. Pearson was great. Matty Pearson had a really good chance, actually, to put us 1-0 up. But, we didn't dwell on it. That's what I love.
Penalty, we didn't dwell on that, where he'd have easily to have their meds down then, wouldn't it? That's what was so good for me, that Pearson missed the penalty. But yet we still got us goals. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Southampton did roar back. I mean, I'm not going to be critical of Town, because that Rothwell strike is an unbelievable strike, isn't it? What an absolute stunner that is. I mean, you can maybe look at Nichols and Pearson's communication a little bit there.
Oh, Matt, you have to. You can't look at it a little bit.
It's such a good strike. I mean, Nichols shouldn't be punching it to the middle. You know, that's a goalkeeping faux pas, is that punching it back out into play. But, I mean, he's obstructed a little bit by Pearson, isn't he? And the way he hits it, though, it's such a strike, isn't it? It's just an unreal strike. I mean, I imagine John Worthington had gone in and gone, continue playing like you are, but do not let them back into this game inside the first 10 minutes of the second half. And it's 2-0 10 minutes into the second half. But
Matt, the thing is, we started well that second half as well.
Yeah, we did.
We started on the front foot. Oh, Matt, it was absolute agony. Listen to this, Rothwell. So I had a few buffering issues for some reason second half, and it buffered just as it left his foot. And it were about a minute till it come back on. So I thought, I was trying to work it out. I think that's going over.
I can't believe
that
official I follow is buffering, cause
yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Mate, unbelievable. Bad broadband speeds in Liversidge, mate. But and it were absolute agony, because I thought, that can't be going in that. And I had to wait a minute. And then when it's come back on, he's running back to the centre circle. I thought, no way. Jesus Christ.
It is an amazing finish, Matt. But like, he shouldn't have got there, though. Nichols should have caught that ball. That ball should have been caught by the keeper. There's no Southampton player near him. Pearson's in front of him. Between Pearson and Nichols, they should be experienced enough to stop that. It should never have got to him on the edge of the box to smash it home. Johnny Ogg's closest to him. He's never going to get there. There's no fault on anyone defending that, because he smashed it first time in top corner. But the problem is, if you're playing someone like Southampton that have got substitutes like they've got available to them, their squad's unbelievable. Margins are very, very fine. They are very, very fine. And if you're giving chances away, and it's not even a... I wonder what XG on that would have been. That would have been something ridiculously minuscule, I'm sure. But if you're giving easy chances... not easy chances. If you're giving chances away like that from things that you should be catching, eventually you're going to get caught. And that's just kind of what happened there. And it was the beginning of the end for us, I think. I know we got back in front later on, but I don't think we ever really recovered from that kind of that going in. And it shouldn't have happened because the keeper should have caught. And before that, to be fair, the corner was won after Kasumu got done on the right hand side. And now he's not a right back, but there was a couple of little 1-2s and he followed his man inside as a midfielder would do. I can't really blame him for that, but that's what the limitations you get with a right back. But between that, you've got one mistake from a centre midfielder becoming a right back, the keeper and Pearson not communicating properly. And he's put an absolute world in from 20 yards. That's the problem when you're playing a team like Southampton. You have to be as near to perfect as you can be. Because if you're not, this is what happens. And then it just shifts the momentum. The fans were booing at half time. And then all of a sudden, a few minutes into the second half, it's like, oh, no. If Nichols catches it, though, and sends it upfield, it's different, isn't it? But it's just that moment is really what turned it for me.
I just think it's obscene, though, that Russell Martin's like, right, we're going to get back into the game, we'll take off Che Adams. It's like, what is going on? Can you imagine that, like, Tao just taking off like a top striker like that? But, like, I don't know if they've done a deal with Bournemouth, but both their subs, like, were on loan from there. But it's, I mean, I know what you're saying, Killer, about, you know, Nichols and what have you, but I'm one of those. I mean, I don't know if someone's got it in for me today. Every time I go on Facebook, it seems to be ITV Sport with his goal on, or I go on Twitter and his goal just seems to be on loop, but he's just classing it. I think that it's just that early goal in the second half. But Matt, do you think we were, I applaud Worthy for kind of starting like we did, you know, in the second half, the first half, but is there an element, am I being a bit of a, I'm going to say twat?
I think we should have two up,
let's try and,
I thought we did well. I honestly thought we did well and we were approaching it quite well. It's just like Killer said, it's one of those, it's not even an error, is it really? It's just a half, it's not even a half, it's like a half mistake whereby you get away with that if you're playing Sheffield Wednesday. You're playing Southampton and someone who's worth millions of pounds rockets one in the top corner. It's Premier League team, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things, unfortunately, whereby you can't make little errors because you'll get punished. And we made the first small error in the 50th minute and we got really harshly punished. And then the second goal is, I mean, Rothwell pulls off Hogg, doesn't he? Well, steady on, Matt. But he like pulls away from Jonathan Hogg, doesn't he? Who can't sort of follow him. And then he hits it. And Nichols is saving that until it clips off Tom Lees and goes in the top corner. Yeah. When you watch it from the reverse, it was going to be it's heading towards Nichols' hand. I mean, he could have flapped it in the net, but it's unlikely for Lee Nichols. But it's just, and then all of a sudden you just think, shit, we're up against it here. Not a bit of it, Cozzy. No, not a bit of it, mate. 2-2, you thought, right, it's over now. Not a chance. Again, this meant, you know, go back to that press conference and John Worthington said it's a change in mentality. And you hear this all the time, don't you, from managers? Oh, yeah, we're going to be attacking. It's a change in mentality. We're going to be different. And you sit there thinking, yeah, all right, but it's the same players. But no, it's definitely a change. And, you know, we've come back. Southampton, what were they, unbeaten in 24 games or something like that? And they're roaring back. I don't think they've conceded more than one at home since September or something. And then, you know, we come roaring back again and we Jonathan Hogg has that chance. Hoggy should really slip in Caroma, shouldn't he, when he has that shot? But, you know, to be fair, he's never there in the first place, you wouldn't expect him there. But then, you know, Brody Spencer does well again down the left-hand side, and we'll talk about Brody soon, Cozzy, for you. And then he plays it in, and Matos hits it, and it's lucky. You know, it is, isn't it? We don't get luck at Huddersfield Town.
Who dares wins, Rodney, innit?
Buy a ticket, etc. But if we get lucky, something breaks in, you know, it's like a butterfly effect somewhere, you know, something breaks, you know, in the time-space continuum, you know, we have to have two pieces of bad luck back for it. And unfortunately, we lost Brody Spencer with injury, didn't we? And then Tom Lees, how that goes in, I've got no idea. There's no one anywhere near him. And it's just flicks off the inside of his leg and just flies in, you know, at the near post. And you just think, and this is with 10 minutes left, but that when we go 3-2 up 60 odd minutes, 15 minutes with 3-2, and you sat there thinking, this could be our day. And it was just such a up until 80 minutes, it was just such a thrilling performance, wasn't it? Whereby if you can play like that one every three games, you know, with that intensity, you're going to be, Huddersfield Town will be fine. But, you know, talk us through that third goal, Cozzy, because you wanted to talk about it, didn't you? But
yeah, Matos, killer talk about as well earlier on, but the guy that I thought we were getting who was going to make a difference to the attacking final third of the pitch, we have not seen, have we? It's just like, obviously it's been set up in a certain way by, you know, Mr. Moore, but that were the, you know, Matos I thought we were getting in that as well. I thought he were absolutely sensational. I think he's really improved the last two, three games as well. And I don't think yesterday you saw any of those, you know, those tackles really that were, you know, kind of, I were thinking two yellows and a red, or what are these new cards? Blue cards. I think he'd be peppered with these blue cards, wouldn't he, as well? But no, absolutely fantastic. And again, you know, when it deflected, it was just a beautiful moment, innit? Because like the world just holds its breath and it just goes up and over the keeper and in and that as well. And for them Town fans in the corner, 700 of them, just a sweet moment, wouldn't it? Go over there. But you've just got to give them massive credit though, Matt, Southampton, because I know they've got the budget and the squad, but the belief is incredible. I bet there'll be so many people, and we're talking about gambling later on, aren't we? But I bet there'll be so many people who won big on Saturday. When we were two up, I bet there were loads that still would have backed Southampton to win. I don't think odds would have been all brilliant. But just when you've got that mentality, just winning games and that as well, you always think you're going to win. And I just thought, like, yesterday, especially them first few minutes before the worldy goal and that as well, that we started well again. And I thought, it's just going to be one of those days where it's just going to be those miracle results. But you know, the best just find a way to get it done and that as well. But I still thought, though, you know, when we went 3-2, when we went back in front, Matt, that I thought we'd come out at least with a draw. I didn't see us losing it. And then, obviously, what happened later on was kind of frustrating. But I know, I've touched on the bench a bit earlier on, probably ahead of my pay grade. But that, for me, that, I know, and we know what we've got to play with and stuff, but when they can be bringing guys like that on and that as well to make a difference. And you could hear the commentators who were just like, there's so much to come on the bench. We can still do it. I think it tells you all you need to know, doesn't it? What they were saying, just we can still do it. We can still win. You know, when it got to about 75 minutes, I still think we can win. That when you're on the run like they are, I mean, I'm trying to think of any time we've had like that. I know, obviously, the Lee Clark famous one, but then it wasn't like, I didn't think we could win. It's almost like, yeah, we could probably get another draw and extend it to a 500 games without a defeat. But but there's a difference between trying to kind of get a draw and win, but obviously their new Leeds were smashing Rotherham, and for them too, it's just a shootout now. I think Ipswich are kind of fading away. So for them, they were always just going to go for the win. So I thought at 3-3, maybe we could still have another chance, but we were out of gas a little bit, weren't we? We were looking a bit leggy as well. And obviously you changed it with what he could, but it's almost like fighting a war with a water pistol compared to their bench. And
the counter to that though, Cozzy, the counter to that is if our bench is so weak, and I think I'm going to be a bit of a party pooper on performance for the last 20, 25 minutes here, I think. But if our bench is so weak and theirs is so strong, surely at that point you were just the way you're approaching the game yourself. And now to me, the warning signs were there at 2-1. I thought we were pressing a lot less, not in packs. Mm. It was much slower. We were getting deeper and deeper and deeper. I feel for the second goal for Southampton, the equaliser, a bit of justice for Johnny Ogie. It's not his fault. I think we need to have a real look at where the actual runner came from. Matos leaves him. Alex Matos leaves him on the right-hand side. He runs behind Johnny Og. Johnny Og sees him later and tries to adjust. That's it. But there's no shout. You can see there's no shout. And that's where that comes from. But I think at that point, you can see it's just tiring a little bit. That intensity, it showed you in that first half that intensity can overcome talent in short periods of time, because we just outworked them. We outworked Southampton. But it did feel like we were in fifth gear and they were kind of in third gear a little bit. And in time, you knew they were going to be able to ramp up and we'd just drop back if the game kind of turned against us. And that's what that first goal did. And then the second goal came in. The third goal was good. We were still pressing high. And that came from Rodoni, a little drive again towards the goal. Southampton shat themselves a little bit, had to adjust. Spencer had a dummy run down to the wing, looking for the overlap. He plays it back then to Matos. Matos is cleaned out by Spencer again, who runs for a second time. And obviously, it's a lucky finish. But you make your own luck, don't you? If you're shooting like that from there, some of them are going to go in. But I just felt at that point, getting to 3-2, that's when I'd have, personally, the warning signs were already there to change it. And now for me, that's a little bit of the inexperience of Johnny Worthington as a coach. And no one can expect him to be perfect. He's an academy guy. He's never done it before. But I just felt with what we had on the bench and what I could see on the pitch and what they were about to bring on and how much pressure they were going to throw at us. And you could just see the press wasn't working as it was. In the beginning, Matt, like we spoke about, I think you and I texted about it, that we were hunting in packs. They were like, you could sense, Liverpool started this a few years ago when Klopp first came in, that when the first pass was bad, they sensed when to press and they were perfect at it. And now everyone's caught up a little bit. And in the first half, that's what we did. We were really, really good at it. But as we tired, it were one man pressing every time. One man, one man. So the easy 1-2 passes were back on for Southampton. And they could just work their way up the pitch a lot easier than in the first half where we kept winning it back in their half. That had stopped. And it had stopped well before they made it 3-3. And I think that was a time to change it. But instead, Worthington went, we're bringing on Pat Jones instead of Radulovic. What I'd have kind of gone with, I think, and an entire shift assist system. I know he didn't. And it's easy for me to sit here as a nobody saying, oh, well, we should have changed it because we lost 5-3 in the end. It proves me right. But I just think there was enough warning signs there to change it. And I think in time, if Worthington's got 9-10 games behind him, maybe that's what he'd have done. But yesterday, I just thought, we could have changed it. And the result, I don't know if we'd have won because, like you say, they've got a lot of options and they'd have put a lot of pressure on. But I felt not changing it kind of gave them an easier way back into it. And we made it a little bit easier for them.
I was going to say, I got the Pat Jones sub. I agree with you. You know, in hindsight, it's easy to sort of say, oh, maybe we could have put Radulovic on. He could have held the ball up and, you know, bought, you know, took the pressure off in certain points. But I kind of got the Pat Jones one. I like Pat Jones a lot. I think there's so much potential there. It's just a shame about his hamstrings. But I got it because, you know, Southampton are pressing forward. There's going to be more holes at the back. And Pat Jones is quick. He's very, very quick. And the pace can, you know, his pace can hurt them. So I understood it. There's a way that we could have maybe played Pat Jones in and he could have carried the ball high up the pitch and you get high up the pitch that way. It was just...
Matt, on that one, Caroma also offers not just pace, but he's a bit of a physical presence. He wins a lot of headers for a small guy. He's a bit of an all-rounder. I think people just generally think he's a fast guy because he's a winger, but when you actually see him, he wins a lot of the ball. I'll get your conch out, Matt, no problem. But I just think Pat Jones is a faster guy. Yeah, he's good. And we've got great hopes for him if his injuries hold off. I just think... as the game shifted, Caroma's pace and his physicality was working. And I know he's tired and we had to change him. But I think that's the moment where it really shifted.
Yeah, I mean, I do have the conch, the Viking conch for Josh Caroma. No, I've always liked Josh Caroma up front, but usually with someone rather than, you know, by himself. But he did a great job by himself. When he's at it, Josh Caroma, he's a good player. It's just he tends to dip up and down quite a lot. But
I know Pat, you've just mentioned Pat Jones there, Matt, but he gives me a little bit of excitement that, and I know we've got to hope he can stay fit, but the way he glided past Walker Peters, I get he were a bit unfair that he had all the energy. He absolutely left him for dead. I know he smashed it in the side netting, but, and I know obviously Walker Peters had played a full game and Jones didn't, but I just, again, it just gives you that moment that in the games that hopefully we can get some results. He can do something like that, and as well, it's just, yeah, it would be nice to see him. You know, I must have been when he announced this Patrick Jones. I thought, who's this guy? I've once heard of him. That didn't score at Norwich the other season, but
he's just as quick with the ball as he is.
And they said
he
looked a player, didn't they? I mean, I always think it's interesting when you get club commentary, you know, because they only see us once unless you're a proper anorak and you do your own work. But they were impressed with him and that as well. But it was quite interesting. One or two town people were like, having a go at him and that as well, but it's like, I just didn't see it. I just thought a promising cameo that makes me think on Wednesday night, he might come on and, you know, get a win against Sunderland or something. He's going to aid us, this guy. So I'm delighted to see him back.
Hey, let's talk about Brody Spencer. Brody Spencer, he's played 6 games for Huddersfield Town. He played right wing back, then he played left centre back, then he played right centre back, then he played right back, then he played left back, and then he played left wing back. He's made 6 appearances for us and he's played 6 positions. Technically, you may be stretching that slightly, but it just shows what a good loan it was first at Motherwell. It's up there with the Lewis O'Brien to Bradford loan, isn't it, in terms of how well it's worked out for us, and Jack Hunt to Chesterfield, wasn't it, Jack, back in the day, or Grays Athletic prior to that. And it's just, he's come back and he's such a phenomenal player at 19. And it's important not to forget, he's 19 years old and he's physically very good. He's quick and he's smart and he's confident. And I am absolutely loving watching him play. And a lot of young players, if you move them around, we've seen this before at Huddersfield Town where, you know, maybe you look at, I'm trying to think of someone off the top of my head, but maybe Scott High, you know, you bring him off the bench and then you move him there, then you move him here. And their performances dip with it. Absolutely not with Spencer. He's made 6 appearances. And he's been in the running for man of the match in every single one of them. And he's been phenomenal. And he was probably our best player again. It was such a shame that he went off injured, and hopefully it's not too serious. But he was so good, wasn't it? Cozzy, I know you were absolutely buzzing with it, weren't you? But you know, we've got a gem here if we look after him properly and don't try and go too high. And then, because young players will always have that dip, they'll come in, they'll play well, then they'll have that dip, and it's important that people don't then get on their backs, because we've seen that so many times at Huddersfield over the years, whereby someone comes in, everyone builds them up, and then when they have a little dip in form, and then they get hammered and go, oh, he's not as good as he thinks he is, oh, he's not that good, and then the confidence goes and drains. And it's important to just sort of stay high on him, because we've seen there's an absolutely great little player here, of course.
What a player. But first we're going to play a little quiz. Killer, who were the last player Town got from Motherwell, and how good were he when he came to Huddersfield Town? Come on, Killer. Do you know?
Oh, not a clue. Come on, because I've been away for a long, long time. Matt'll know.
Motherwell?
Yeah. We got a player from Motherwell, and he went an absolute car crash. He hardly ever played. Some people have never clicked through a turnstile and see COVID. Think of COVID. Rolando Ahrens.
Oh, don't do it, Cozzy. He never existed anyway.
From Newcastle.
His spell before he came to us was from Motherwell, so technically he came from Motherwell.
No, we signed him from Newcastle. Oh, we did. Cozzy, you're no longer quizmaster.
Matt, we did. Off you go. No, Matt, we did. He was on loan at Motherwell and then came to us after that, but... Yeah, Brody Spencer. Once he was on press conference duties on Thursday, and I thought, honestly, I just watched him and I just thought, wow, this is a guy who's just so zoned in, so cool, just taking everything in his stride. It was incredible. He was just like chilled out, just seemed to know his game, know where he's at with everything, and he was absolutely fantastic. I remember I did think it last season. I think it was the Blackburn game where he, I don't know if he debuted or maybe it might have been his second game and that sort, but I just thought, I think he was at fault for the goal, but I just thought there's a player there. And obviously, he kind of just disappeared and it's gone up there. But what I love about him, Matt, is just like you can play him anywhere. When you've got a guy like that, it's versatile. No, didn't you like him to Lee Peltier last week, which I did like and that as well? I just thought that's
in sort of how physically good he is at that young age and quick. And
his engine is just amazing, isn't he? And that as well, just like getting up and down and that as well. It is, and I just think it's like if we he's on our books, got him back on loan, and he's making an instant impact. He'd cost a bit of money on that kind of performance as well, but fantastic. And obviously on the news of the week, you know, we've had Turton last week, he's done. Josh Ruffles this week, he's done. It's huge for us. But again, I thought it was a big moment in the game, Matt, when he went off injured. I thought that was our hopes went with him, mate. And that's a 19-year-old. We're just like saying. 19-year-old playing at Southampton, and that was such a big thing in the game. But that just shows the impact that he's had as well. I think it gave him so much confidence, that Man City game. I think it's given a few lads that Man City game a confidence. Obviously, the number on Grealish, and it's just little confidence builders in that as well. It's like he came back in, did a job that game, and then, you know, he's just kicked on. But yeah,
it's been well managed. It's been well managed. You know, with Darren Moore, we've maybe criticised indirectly a little bit, but he managed him well when he came back. And John Worthington's carried that on as well. So, you know, credit to both of them for that. I mean, we need to move it on a little bit because we're 42 minutes in and we've not finished about the game and talked about any of the other topics yet. But I think with the rest of the game, I think it's very easy to say we started to look very leggy. Our fitness went and their subs came on and took the game away from us. The guy that came on up front, you know, did you say we're 21.6 million?
21.6 million from Stade Rennais. I've done my research.
He came on and he was very good, wasn't he? He was very, very good.
Direct, what a push. Yeah,
very good. And I mean, 5-3 at the end of the day, it's disappointing, isn't it, to say how well they've played, to come away with nothing just felt very harsh. But you can be buoyed by the performance and be slightly disappointed by the result, which I am. And I think that's fair because I just felt we didn't deserve 5-3.
Didn't matter, but I think the best thing is
all maybe, but
the best thing is with a midweek game coming up, though. I think it's just lit the touch paper. A number of people have said they can't wait for Wednesday. If the team are thinking, like half of my mates who, God, when Moore were in charge, people didn't want to come. People can't wait for Wednesday's game. The team should be thinking that. And that's the best taker out of that. And even better, I thought, because I wrote a tweet yesterday saying we won't be in the bottom three for long, because I looked at your message like, Wagner, blah, blah, blah. I didn't realise it were 2-2, so I deleted that and I quickly changed it and said, oh, you know, blah.
I know, honestly, I love David Wagner, but he has done absolutely nothing for us this season, that shite house. He's literally beat us twice, knobbed us twice, and then lost to pretty much everyone around us. Yeah. He's done us no favours.
It's just positive for me, though, Matt, because, like...
Still love him.
Yeah, there's some massive games this midweek and that as well. I think I've got it written down here, Stoke versus QPR on Wednesday. So, and if you look there, I saw Millwall lost at Coventry today, and I saw some of their fans. I thought, I'll have a little nosy, and they're really winning in free fall. All of a sudden,
when we were winning 3-2, we were 18th in the league. We've reeled them. Us and QPR have reeled that lower mid table group back in now, and it's a real free fall. It's a shame Blackburn kind of won, but they did beat Stoke because Blackburn were absolutely falling through the floor. And it's amazing, isn't it? They've sacked their manager and appointed a new one while we're still interviewing. They've done that, and fair play to them. They've been very quick, and they've brought someone decent in.
I think what's going to be fascinating, though, Matt, is like Wednesday, because Tony Mowbray, is it like Beale's team's coming? Beale's team's coming attack. It's going to be absolutely fascinating, because there's going to be people thinking, right, we want this football we've seen at Southampton. We want it on Wednesday night. And obviously, you don't want to be. This is going to be the expectation. Now, rather than this being a one-off and a nothing-to-lose performance and, you know, let's get men forward and a 3-4-3 and stuff, people are wanting to be seeing that on a regular basis. So it's going to be fascinating. I'm so pleased we've got a midweek game coming up and that as well. It's such a crunch game. And obviously, we've got two home games. We've got all, obviously, next Saturday. And I just come out with just so many positives. And just the fact that we're not in the bottom three and that as well, for me, that were a bonus at the end as well. So a game that we knew, I don't like writing it off, and at half time you're thinking, God, it's a game we probably could win here, but we expected to probably lose and it's gone, and we're still at the bottom three. There's still that pack above us. To me, it's only positives. The only negative is, you know, the Spencer, you know, hopefully he's back soon. Helic obviously won't play in. How fit is he? But it's just that treatment table. It's just unbelievable. That's his biggest hindrance, mate, at the moment, isn't it? But it's all of a sudden, it feels like we've got his club back. And now we'll talk about manager probably later on, but it's just like the worth it and effect is can't be underestimated, not just for the 7 goals in 2 games, but just the people that can't wait for Wednesday, there'd have been empty seats galore under Darren Moyes. I can't wait for Wednesday.
All right. Let's move on. So let's go through some of the comments, because we are live on YouTube at the minute. So if you're listening latterly, this is how it's going in the chat at the minute. So let's have a look through Blowy. I think we all want one of those with his Kurt Angle meme photo there. It says, Duff does not excite me at all. Give Worthy till the end of the season, as we're clearly playing better football under him, scoring 7 in our past 2 games. Worthington in. As we look down, it says, with Helic in there, it would have been a much closer game against Southampton. I think likely to agree on that one. And he said game. Blowy again, he says, another thing was the fact that most Saints fans were praising us, and people who were most annoyed with us losing were the Chesties. I hope Saints go up instead of them.
Yeah, I went for a cup of tea today with my mate, and he went to Ellen Road just here, and the cheering for Huddersfield were unbelievable. So people think they hate us, but mate, they were the score. It came on their scoreboard like we were winning. Like, come on, Town, come on, you doggies, and all this lot. But I don't know.
Terrier 72 says, got to keep Worthy in charge till the end of the season, in my opinion. Connection to him, fans and the club, feel an appointment now will be another mistake. Bringing a new guy for pre-season or keep Worthy. Let's keep going through here. Mikey says, last 2 games under John is best football I've seen since 2017. Give John the job until end of the season. Blowy's back again. He said, what made Kasumu's goal even better was the one time I wear a shirt with his name at an away game. Kasumu is an absolute gem. I love him. Keep wearing that shirt, mate, if that's what happens. LG828 says, yeah, not sure about Radulovic. Lacks energy.
Yeah,
and
Killer. Bring Killer in on here. Killer, you're a bit on that mentality, aren't you? A little bit, Radulovic?
Yeah, I was worried about him when he first came in because the Finnish league's not the greatest. Like we spoke about last week, Morelius came from there, Pukki came from there, but pace or strength kind of goes a long way. I don't think Radulovic has either of them, and he has to be the tallest guy I've seen play up front who's unable to win any sort of header. And I just expected it. I thought he's good at his feet.
Even Udlin.
But he's not fast.
Over Udlin.
Kyle Udlin, yeah. Kyle Udlin.
Yeah, but Kyle Udlin came from... Kyle Udlin had bagged 24 goals in 28 games in greenhouses in Finland and come with a reputation and a... was it Radulovic? They said a 7-figure fee for Matt. Was it Radulovic?
No.
Was that Healy? Okay, well, however much it cost, he came and the impression was he was going to be a bona fide first team starter kind of from day one. And to me, looking at him, he's about as far away as a first team starting number nine we've got. I think Healy's better than him when it comes to championship football. I think Danny Ward would be if he were fit, which is probably unlikely. Birdsorg's fit better than him and more effective in our system. And then even Karoma is. I thought when he came on yesterday, again, he looks lightweight. There's just, I don't notice him when he plays. And I don't think you can criticise a striker more than that. If he's scoring goals but not doing very much, fair enough, you're doing your job. But I don't actually know what his game is yet. And I find that normally I think I can kind of work it. I think most people can kind of work out what a striker offers and what if they're just a hard worker or whatnot. But to me, I don't know about you, Matt, what do you reckon on Radulovic? But I just think he's not at championship level yet. And now it probably is that. Everyone says the championship's one of the hardest divisions to work to play in. It's strong, it's physical, and it's fast. And it takes a bit of time to adjust to it. But he looks to me like he's got a long way to go to adjust to it.
I think physically, he's not really played properly since the end of October. So there's a lot of catch up that he's got to do. It's almost 4 months ago. I think physically he's got to catch up, and it might be pre-season when he does that. But I think there's a lot of nice touches in there. There's a lot of really good link up that I saw early on. I think the main concern is probably the lack of foot speed, you know, foot pace. And if we want to play a high press, and if that is the template, the high press, then you kind of go, why have you signed him, Matt Cartwright, if we're going to play a high press going forward? Because he's not going to be able to do it, because he's not, at this moment in time, definitely not someone who can, you know, chase around for 90 minutes and force the opposition to misplace passes. But I think there's a good player there. I just think we need to get him fit first before he moves on. I think touch-wise, he's very good. Technically, I think he's really nice from what I've seen. I like him, but fitness-wise, he's got some catching up to do.
He's just not presence, is he, though? He's just not that presence, Matt. Sorry, he's just not that physical presence I expected from a guy in his shape and his style and what I thought we were getting. And I feel that's where my disconnect with him. No.
Let's send Boothie down to the training ground. So this is how you stick your elbows in. But Daddy Legs says, bloody daughter has changed my YouTube name again, Dean Smith. So thanks for that, Daddy Legs. Freddie Cocker says, I'd still want the Duff man in if we can tempt him. Worthy until the end of the season will either be Warnock-esque or Terry Connor at Wolves. And I don't want to see another Town Legend status tarnished. A little bit like Danny Schofield, I think, there. Although Chris Fountain disagrees, he says, give it Worthy till the end of the season. Up the Town.
Matt, do you,
and
can
again,
I
Blow is saying Worthy in.
If I play devil's advocate,
trying to
Matt,
work through these, Cozzy.
Go on, sorry, mate. If it weren't Worthy, and if it was someone that had been at Crews Academy, do you think there'd be that outpouring of love for him in, based on one game at Sexy Football?
I think it's based on the style. I don't
you
know
honestly
the
think,
style that we
rather
seen.
Than John Worthy in Town, we love him because he's a local lad and we've played well in one game.
Do Town fans really do that with local lads, though? I always think local lads get more hammer than love a lot of the time. So I think it's the style he's done it in, to be honest. If we sat back and played the same style as Darren Moore, but had won 4-0 and 5-3 and lost 5-3, I think everyone would be wanting a new manager.
We're chatting manager next, aren't we, though? So, yeah.
Yeah, if you let me get on with this, yeah.
Your blue card's out.
I know. Simbin Cozzy, we can remove him, actually. No, we won't. Max says, send all the youth to Motherwell. Let's move down. Paul Hitchison says, these last two games have played with Town of Play with serious attacking intent. We didn't deserve to lose like that, but the game tactics were spit on. I think he means spot on. Nick Jenkinson says, give it Worthy. Seems like he's bothered. At least we're seeing some excitement now. Terry 72 says, can't blame Duff not wanting to relocate, which we'll talk about in a moment as we come down. Joshua Hallowell says, can you express how you feel about the result via the form of interpretive dance? Thanks in advance. Cozzy, do you want to grind one out?
What about so what, how I feel about the result?
About interpretive dance, yep.
I don't know. Carry on reading and I'll try and come up with something at the end.
All right. Daddy Legs says, Headley, Hogg, Pearson, Yutta, Jackson, Diarra and Chapman all out of contract at the end of the season. You can only offer contracts to three players. Who are you keeping? Do you know what? Brady did this on the warm-up with Louis. So if you want to have a look at that, you can listen to Brady and Louis on the warm-up for Southampton. But very quickly, those three would be Headley, Hogg and maybe Yutta for me. Very quickly. Killer?
Hogg, Pearson and Diarra. Really easy, actually, on that one.
Quasimodo?
Headley, Jackson, Pearson.
All right, got different answers there. Chris Green, Greener, says, I really don't want Michael Duff. I think we have to stay away from him. He's not an improvement on Mua, if you had to compare him to Darren Pua. I disagree with you, Chris, on that. I think we'll come to Michael Duff in a minute. But Paul says, I can't wait for the Wednesday game. John Shaw, Shawsey says, fitness is reportedly a worn out legacy. Yes, this is something that I did want to mention, but I forgot. Not since Carlos have we had a team to press the opponents week in, week out. Yes, Neil Warnock, I know a lot of Town fans probably won't like to hear it, but there is, shall we say, talk in football that Warnock's teams tend not to be very fit. And when managers go in after Neil Warnock, there is a very big criticism about the fitness levels of players post-Warnock. And Darren Moore's obviously tried to change some of the training and tried to get the players more fit. And unfortunately, injuries have occurred through that. And I have heard that that's happened at other clubs as well. But we love Neil Warnock, so we don't really want to say too much negative about the GOAT. But I think that'll do. You lads going to Leeds at home from Blowy. Yes, always. Right. What we'll do now is we will have a quick break. We'll go to the away day log. So this week we've got Paul Stead, who has braved the weather, gone down to Southampton, and he's done this for us. And afterwards, we'll have throw an advert in there if you're listening to this on Acast. And it's me and Cozzy trying to flog you NordVPN. So enjoy that.
Good morning, Town fans, and welcome to my optimistic away day log. My name is Paul. I'm with my son, Ryan, and we are just about to set off for the South Coast. If we can't be optimistic after last week's result, then when can we be? This is just about as good as it gets for Town this season. So I'm going to enjoy it until reality sets in again, which I realise will probably be at about 3:10 this afternoon. But until then, I'm still enjoying riding high on the crest of Worthy's 4-0 wave. I'm looking forward to seeing who is in the team at 3:00, and just as much looking forward to seeing how we will play. Next stop, St Mary's. Hello again. We've arrived at the stadium now. There's a decent turnout. I've just seen the lineup, and I have to say my optimism has died a little bit, but my intrigue has grown, because we spend all season looking for a striker and then we decide to leave him on the bench. But Karoma did well in the last game, so hopefully he can do well this time. The lineup is looking like we're set up to counter-attack, disrupt with Hogg and Matos in the midfield, but it is going to be interesting. It's obviously going to be a tough game. Southampton, I think the aggregate score for the last five games is 19-1, so we'll be lucky to get anything out of this game. Hopefully, with our optimistic hat on, I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. Come on, Town, come on. Wow, wow, wow. Half time. Southampton 0, Huddersfield 2. Can't actually believe what I'm watching. For 35 minutes, we went toe-to-toe with Southampton. You wouldn't have known that we were near the bottom and they were near the top. We pressed well. We looked a bit toothless for 35 minutes. But up stepped Sauber with a cracking strike to make it 1-0. We'd have been happy with 1-0 at half-time. And then Kasuma with a blistering strike. We're at the far end, opposite end to when they were. But it looked like a fantastic strike. 2-0 up. I went for 2-2 at the start. And I think I'd be disappointed if it finished 2-2, because we have given as good as we've got, probably better. Can't wait for the second half, but it's going to be a long 45 minutes. Come on, Town.
Full time, we're just walking from the ground. It might not be the result we wanted, but it was every inch the performance. I heard lots of other fans saying the same. Every inch the performance that we want to see in games going forward. If we play like that against other teams, I'm sure we'll come away with plenty of points, enough to keep us up. Entertainment wise, it was an amazing game, a roller coaster, worth every penny of the away ticket and away travel costs, and you wouldn't say that about many games we've seen this season. So all in all, I've enjoyed the day out. It might not be the result we wanted, but loads of positive signs there. And at the moment, why not give the job to Johnny Worthington? Because that was a great game to watch. Up the town.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cozzy, what's your favourite away day?
Matt, it's got to be the City Ground at Nottingham. Just old school stadium, you're right near the pitch, great atmosphere. But there's nothing like playing at home. Same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. There we go. Thanks for that, Paul. I enjoyed that. That was nice and refreshing from Paul. I did like that very much. Right, guys, let's move things on nicely. So, remember, NordVPN is there for you. We'll stick the comment. We'll stick that in the blurb in the podcast. We discussed. We had injuries down to talk about, and Josh Ruffles is out for the rest of the season. But I think we covered that pretty much, didn't we? Because we can move on from there. So let's go to Duff Man. So Michael Duff. Chris mentioned that he thinks Michael Duff is similar to Darren Moore, but I have to disagree with that. Darren Moore for me is someone who's always had quite good resources and kind of underachieved with them, even though he did get Sheffield Wednesday promoted with, you know, the 96 points. But, you know, that's over two seasons when, you know, he's already got them relegated and then, you know, failed to go up first season with, you know, the biggest budget in the league and then finished third with the biggest budget in the league. Whereas Michael Duff, on the other hand, I think Barnsley probably should have beaten Sheffield Wednesday in that playoff. And I think had they not got that red card, they would have probably gone on to do so in the summer. He got Cheltenham promoted really well. That was a great, you know, did really well to get Cheltenham up, took them to the highest ever league finish the year after, and then moved to Barnsley. At Barnsley, he's got them in the playoffs with a team which is inferior to a lot of them, or was inferior to a lot of them in that league. And he actually did very well. Swansea was just a very, very, very bad fit. And, you know, I've mentioned that a number of times. Is he as bad as Darren Moore? Not for me. Is he right for Huddersfield Town? I'm not sure. Alan Nixon seems to think that if he moves from the Cheltenham area, where I think there's some schooling issues around his kids, I might be wrong by that, to West Yorkshire, then potentially he's going to be okay. How are you guys feeling about Michael Duff, killer? He's not the super sexy, exciting manager that's come from far away to sweep us off our feet and take us on a magic tour to the Premier League. But there might be some sense in there potentially for him, because the players do sort of suit it. That's why I wanted him this summer. The players kind of suit what he does, or what he did at Barnsley, you know, in terms of high press, high octane and getting into people's faces, etc. And not necessarily being on the ball for 90% possession.
Is that something Town fans want at this point, though? That's my kind of question to that, in that we've had a back three / back 24, whatever, under Darren Moore. And I know I've got a hang up against the back five. You know, Matt, I talk about it all the time. Everyone must be bored shitless of it. and he does play. He plays wing back system, right? And okay, Worthington showed yesterday it can always be actually pretty good. Fine, but I don't know if Town fans want that. I don't necessarily think it's what I want. We've got to be realistic about what kind of club Town are. We're not a club that's going to get in a really attractive manager. It's just not going to happen. We don't have the resources for it. I think when the name's thrown at you, Michael Duff, you think, oh yeah, he did all right at Cheltenham. He did okay at Barnsley. And then when Swansea didn't work out, okay, it didn't work out sometimes. Like, I think Darren McAntony spoke about Darren Moore this week, I think, didn't he, in one of his podcasts, and just saying he just did a really shit job at Huddersfield. It happens. Some managers just don't fit at the certain clubs, right? And maybe that's what's happened with Michael Duff at Swansea. But then I looked into it a little bit deeper, Matt. In the summer, Michael Duff signed 14 new players for Swansea. And they started with the worst start in 40-odd years, I think it is, at Swansea. And if a guy's brought in 14 of his own players and then started...
Did he bring them in or did Paul Watson bring them in, the director of football?
That's an argument that can be had, but it's still... Normally, they'll throw it at the managers as the final sign-off. But they're still aware of the system he wants to play, Matt, because Michael Duff plays a very distinctive system that everybody's aware of. He did really well in League Two with Cheltenham. Cheltenham got promoted, I think, with the 15th biggest budget in League Two. So it's not like you say, Matt, they didn't have loads of money. It took him 3 years, though, so it wasn't an instant kind of, it works straight away, which we're kind of looking for now, as said by Kevin Nagle on his amazing documentary / tweet.
Three years to Barnsley.
Well, yeah, well, maybe that's it. If he comes in, that kind of works. Maybe that does fit. Then he's gone to Barnsley. Barnsley just relegated from the Championship. They're not a nobody team in League One, though, are they? They're not like...
No, they're decent.
Exactly. He got them to the highest ever position, Cheltenham. So that's the achievement, not Barnsley. To me, what he did at Barnsley was good. But there's a lot of managers that have done good things. Like Darren Moore did a good thing with Sheffield Wednesday last year, and it's not worked here. So I can't say now I'm sitting here thinking Michael Duff's really exciting. He's not. And the worry about him not wanting to move up here. But Alan Nixon spoke about it a bit recently, hasn't he? That maybe that could be something from the town side, in that they've listened to the fan perspective. And I think we've run a... Well, I say we... Obviously, you run a poll to see what the percentage of town fans are that want Michael Duff in and against. And I don't know where it is at the moment, but I think it was 78% no at one point.
Yeah, I've got it here, killer. 514 votes, 78 no, 22% yeah. And then I put it on Instagram as well, 81% no and 19% yeah. John Shaw's mentioned there, but I don't get the angst for it, killer. And I don't think it's just because Worthington's kind of charmed a few. There seems to be a real issue against him. Why do you think that is, mate? I don't get it. All of a sudden, especially after...
Because he was against Darren Moore in the playoff final and Moore seemed to have got one over him. Do you think, is that it? Or because no, they're not the same, are they? They're not the same.
No, from town fans...
It's not exciting. Right? It's just not exciting.
It's just that...
It's not exciting. Yeah. And I think that goes a long way. I think it goes a long way. Because, again, we're sat here saying, oh, it's an all right appointment. I'm not excited. I won't be excited. I won't be getting out of my seat for it. No. And okay, you've got to give them time. I understand it. But not all fans are rational fans. A lot are irrational. And,
oh, we're not rational.
And they'll have an angst against it. But so we saw what happened with Darren Moore against Leeds. He never recovered from it. And now if he comes in and already we're not excited by it, Kevin Nagle's suggesting Premier League in 3 years and it's a new restart, this, that, and the other. And then you go out and bring in another kind of League One good manager. It's not really, to me, going to shift season tickets. And I really think that is a massive motivator at this point in the season.
Not staying
I'm
up, killer.
It's not being announced.
I think
Worthington could do that at this point. Right. I think Worthington could do that with it at this point, showing what he did over the last two games. I think they're looking at the long-term future. And the other problem is with Michael Duff is the loyalty there. He left Cheltenham to go to Barnsley, did a year at Barnsley, then left to go to Swansea. And the next thing you hear is he's not sure if he wants to move up here. That's a rumour, of course. But if that is correct, where's the long-term plan that the club are kind of talking about when it comes to appointing the next manager? I just feel like there's a bit of a disconnect between Michael Duff and what he kind of stands for, the way he plays and the excitement that he wouldn't bring in regards to the appointment and what Town are supposed to be looking for. But that might just be me. I don't know.
I don't understand what the remit is, really. Do you know, the club haven't said who we are and who we aren't looking at, are they? They've not come out and said Michael Duff's going to get the job or anything like that. But I don't really understand that the whole style of play and everything about the club, the identity of the club, has to be driven by the director of football. And so far, I've not really seen what we're trying to do. And this next appointment really tells you everything that you need to know, really, about the vision, really. Someone's put something which is quite interesting, and it's been on, it's been a topic of our conversations as well, Paul. It is mentioned, I think we should keep Worthy till the end of the season and go for Klopp's assistant then. And that's something that kind of excites you, doesn't it? If, you bring in a Pep Linders or something, and then all of a sudden that's a lot more exciting than bringing in a bloke that did okay down the road, isn't it? And that would be quite exciting, and it would feel like a rebuild and a fresh start and everything. The risk is, I think the world of John Worthy. I think he's great. I loved him as a player. Do you know, the tenacity he had as a player, he gave everything for Huddersfield Town. He's giving everything as a coach. I've got, all the time in the world for him, having, played once with him at school, et cetera. And you know, when I used to follow Town and that team full of, you know, academy players, it was great having a local lad from Gunmussel as your captain of your football club. You had that connection and everything. It was brilliant. And the thing that will always happen, and it happened with Jacko as well. You know, you can look at Jacko. There will be a dip at some point, you know, and the way they're playing at the minute, is it sustainable? Potentially not, you know, the fitness of the players, etc. So you don't want to be in a position in 6 to 8 weeks whereby we're down towards the bottom of the league and people are looking at John Worthington slightly differently. And there is that risk, but there's also the risk as well that if you don't appoint John Worthington, Cozzy, you could bring someone in who's completely rubbish again and end up going down anyway. There's so much risk here, isn't there? I mean, yeah. Worthy's done brilliant, but it's two games and there's not... I mean, if he plays like this from now to the end of the season, you'd think we'd be fine. And I think if we did, everyone at the end of the season would be like, oh, give it Worthy long-term. But he's... there's a long way... It's two games, isn't it? And there's a long way to go.
I don't know if it's even that, Matt, because for me, like... Memories are short, but for an hour against Sheffield Wednesday, we were pretty average, I thought. And obviously, they capitulated. I know I don't like taking away from people who've kind of achieved stuff. So, at the end of the day, John Worthington, manager, we won 4-0 against Sheffield Wednesday. But I thought a lot more to do with how they folded. But fair play to him. And then, all right, we were happy yesterday. It was really good, but we conceded 5 and lost. And Killer was mentioning there about his naivety. You know, later on in the game, maybe he would have changed something when it looked like, you know, we were getting overrun and that as well. And I think the only thing is, Matt, Sunderland win 2-3-0 or something on Wednesday, then it's panic stations again. It's such a dilemma.
Like we need a manager,
Yeah, it is, or even at Hull or whatever. It's such a dilemma. I think even if QPR had, you know, ended up winning yesterday in bottom three, I think it takes some brave people to... there's so many comments and I knew it would be like that tonight, Worthy until the end of the season, but I just think if Duff comes in, I don't say guarantees safety, but I think he'll be all right, but I'm with you, Killer. It's kind of moving on next season, card sales, exciting football. That it's such a nightmare, really, at the moment, because it's almost like that job remit they put out. It's just like the impossible at the moment. It's almost like, right, we need someone in to stay up, apply now, and you'll get it till May. And then it's like, right, we need to new culture, need to, you know, bums on seats, exciting football, apply again in August. But we're wanting someone to do both. And I just think looking around, it's very, 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 very difficult, Matt. And I just think it's all going to be tempt. The fans will feel totally different about it if Sunderland beat us on Wednesday. But
thing
then
is, though, Cozzy, thing is, here, Worthy's going to take Sunderland, isn't it? He's going to take Wednesday because it's Sunday night now, right?
Yeah.
It's unlikely for somebody to come in and take that, right? Then you've got Saturday, really quick turnaround again. So even if a new guy came in, it's likely to be Worthy then anyway.
Yeah, two massive games.
It makes sense here to let Worthy take the next two games and then kind of make the judgment, because the next two games are massive, the home games, they're winnable. And then you've got a week off, I think, until Watford away. I think we're going to have him anyway. So I'd actually wait, I think, right now just for these two games, because you've got him anyway, and then decide. Because if you win them both, you're in an entirely, you're 18th in league probably, most likely. You've jumped quite a long way up. And whilst it's unrealistic because we're Town and we lose games that we should win and win games we should never get near, I understand that, but I feel like we're going to have to ride it like that anyway. So I think it's time just to sit a little bit. I expected Duffin last week, to be honest. I thought at the end of last week, that's when he'd kind of been announced.
We're heading
that way, wasn't it? And then the snow happened. And I'm just in my head thinking, it's snowing. Maybe he can get a year and then.
I just think that's a bit of a weird story for Alan Nixon to come out today. It's really odd. It's not like, it didn't feel like.
There's a lot of weird stories, though, to be fair.
It is. I mean, and like someone said, he's got more right than he has wrong, probably for others, but it's just almost like, it didn't say the jobs. It kind of reads in the jobs is if he'll move north, but then is it or not? And I think the problem you've got as well is like if you did get next season, if we're in League One, Wednesday won again on things. So you're right, Matt, to say last week they can't be written off. So five is not a lot of a gap really in that as well. So I know we're looking at the pack above, and so I think you've got a clue in them. But if we go down, the quality of the manager that we're going to get is you won't get a Pep Linders in League One and stuff. So it's a real dilemma. I mean, I'm glad it's not my decision, mate.
I was having the discussion with Lee Morris earlier, and Lee Morris doesn't want Worthy. He sort of wants a manager in. But I'm sort of like, I'm with Killer. You can kind of give it a week, another week. You can't really give it 6 weeks, but you can give it a week, another week, just to see where we're at. Because, he's bought us time. Honestly, that win against Sheffield Wednesday bought us time. And we said that on the podcast last week. If he wins against Sunderland again, that's a game that we probably weren't expected to win not so long ago. So if we pick up a win against Sunderland, again, it buys you more time again. And if you beat Hull, if you win two games, all of a sudden it's like, well, we only need to win another three or four games from now to the end of the season and we'll be fine. So
Sunderland have turned a corner though a bit, haven't they? It'll be a hard game now.
Yeah.
You haven't beaten anyone good but one, two out of the last three.
No, well, we're not good. I mean, Sunderland are a funny team, but they pass the ball around again. It's suited to our high press again, is Sunderland. So it's a game we could potentially get something in. And so is Hull, because Hull are very, very good. I mean, they've got Philogene, Carvalho behind the front two, and they've got a really good side. I think Dilap's injured, isn't he? But they've got Tufan as well.
Big week with all sorts of good players.
But
yeah, big week.
Again, they don't like it when teams get stuck into them. Again, it's the two teams that are very good and potentially should beat us, but we could also take it to them and beat both sides. And if that happens, it just puts a complete different slant on it, because then you could say, do you know what, Pep Linders could come in at the end, or whoever, Hazela or whatnot, Stefan Baumgart, let's keep going Baumgart. At the end of the season, give him a couple of months.
Tried to find him last week, Matt, but he were avoiding me, mate.
I know. But it just buys you that time. And if Worthy buys his time, great. If we lose against Sunderland and Hull, okay, maybe Duffer needs to come in and it changes. But
I think the results this week dictate him for me, Matt. And it should do, really, because if you're a cool head or a good CEO and that as well, you shouldn't be reactive to results and stuff. And
where we are in the league, though, isn't it, mate?
Loving, if we win on Wednesday, will be just giving the job and stuff. It's like you've got to have that view, haven't you, and that vision and that as well, and block out the noise. But there's a lot
of players out of contract this summer. There's a huge chance to be able to do a rebuild this summer, and that's why the managerial appointment needs to be really key, because you need to bring someone in who can help, who can deliver upon the players that come in and the rebuild. And you need to know who you're rebuilding for as well. That's so key. I mean, if you throw in a Michael Duff in there, then him versus, and I'll keep saying Pep Linders because it was mentioned in the comments, but him versus Pep Linders would deliver completely different sets of football. And that, again, it goes back to Mark Cartwright again. And what is the vision for this football club? If, you're looking exciting and wanted to bring someone in, then it would be fantastic if you could start this at the end of the season. And that's when the players come in, and you go back to David Wagner when he got 14, 15 new players and we really hit the ground running after that Sweden trip and everything was exciting. And you can ride that wave, that momentum of a wave, the sexy foreign manager coming in, who's worked with Jurgen Klopp or whoever, and all these new players from, and all the, the Deadwood, et cetera, will be out, et cetera. And you've got a completely different scenario there. And that's the scenario you really want. It's just how we get there from now to the end of the season. And we are perilous. Let's not make any mistakes. We're in a perilous position. And it's just such a risk running with inexperience at the minute for longer. For the longer we wait, the longer we have to keep him. It's one of those things, isn't it? So it's a very difficult situation for a very new board to Huddersfield Town. It's very, very... one mistake and we could go down. So that's why it's like, probably a good reason to wait for a week, I think.
It's like what the killer said. I expected him to be in by now. If it were Duff, I'm surprised. Is this, staying down south or... That's just weird. It was just a weird story to come out with that idea. And I just don't know where it leaves us, obviously if it's true, because obviously you're getting... Yeah, knucklehead town fans. Well, if you don't want to move up north, then we don't want to. But obviously, can't live in Cheltenham and manage Huddersfield. But obviously, Warnock moved up to home Firth, didn't he, for a bit. But I just, it's such a. We see this every week now, don't we? It's such a massive week for us, and I don't envy Matt Cartwright at all, mate. It's such a tough, because if he gets it wrong, he's gone. I think Lee Bromby got so much hammer for. And yeah, he brought us Corbrand nearly a Premier League and did a lot of good stuff, but he walked the plank with Fotheringham, and I'm afraid if Cartwright gets this wrong, he's gone. End of.
Good question here is Terrier72. Says one question. Preston are a similar type of club to ourselves, yet never seems to be in a relegation battle season in and out in the mid-table safety. What are they doing differently than them. I mean, Preston's wage bill is really daft, isn't it, compared to what they've had? They've had a bigger wage bill from us, but I think they've just had a good group of players like Alan Brown, etc., and Ben Whiteman, etc. They've got sort of a good group of players that just have kept, you know, Daniel Johnson for years. They've just had a group of players that have never really been poached and just kind of keep their head above water. And managers who come in tend to be a bit more pragmatic, and I don't think they ever play expansive, exciting football. They just tend to sort of bore the way a little bit, don't they, to mid-table. But I mean, we could
do dream,
that.
Matt, the dream, Matt,
the dream,
mid-table.
The dream of being boring in mid-table, amazing.
We mentioned it last week, but it was funny when they were reading out Southampton, were like, since we've got Premier League, we're 18th, 17th, 3rd, 17th, 19th, 20th. It's like, it's just Imagine weird, that. Isn't it? Just crazy.
Right, Cozzy, we've had some negative. I don't like to finish on a negative, but the last real thing is Kean Harrott. Second time he's been in trouble in 12 months. This time it's for gambling. I mean, football is absolutely rife, isn't it, with gambling sponsors all over the place. Skybet sponsor the league, etc. It's thrust in their face time and time again, isn't it? And you've got a young lad here who has placed 484 bets from across four separate seasons. So it's not an isolated incident. The overall amount staked across four seasons is 8,105. The returns were 4,448. So he's not a brilliant gambler by any stretch there. And he has bet on Huddersfield Town to win and lose in total 183 bets, which include games and competitions that he's participated in, including Huddersfield, Port Vale, Bradford and Guiseley, including bets against Huddersfield Town. I mean, that's probably where his money's come from. Additionally, these also include one spot bet, which doesn't involve Kean Harrott. And he's been banned for 4 months. My view on Kean Harrott is maybe that he's a young lad, isn't he? Cozzy, I'm going to throw it to you, actually, because here's a young lad who, and Jonathan Worthington said in the press conference, didn't he, that Huddersfield Town would help him, which was nice to hear, because gambling is something which is, I don't have an issue with it. I can stick a tenner on and then not go back to something for 6 months. I've got quite a good control on it. I don't really do it. I'm not that bothered. And I know my limits. I know what I want to bet on. I won't bet on anything that I don't know anything about, et cetera, et cetera. But not everyone's like me, either, Cozzy. There are people that have issues with it. We've seen Harry Toffolo recently cite his poor mental health to gambling. And there are always reasons, and there are a lot of things that you don't hear and things, but you know, you're someone who's had, who's talked about gambling quite a lot. So just tell us from your personal experience about gambling and how you think it sort of applies to Kean Harrott as well.
Yeah, well, you'll find me tomorrow night in a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, and every week and often twice a week and that as well. It took me to the end, to the edge. 14 years clean, hopefully next month as well. But yeah, it's really difficult because I think it creeps up on you, does this addiction, before you know it. And some people might, you know, when you shouted out there's figures, Matt, and money and things like that, you know, the bets as well. And I think what's kind of a bit scary for me is, like, and I don't know whether that was the reason why the kind of the ban was quite big and that as well, betting on games that, you know, teams that it was playing it for and against, obviously that inside knowledge of injuries and team news and things like that as well. But once you get in a hole with your life, you just get sucked into it. And I think it is so difficult because, like, you've got, we say in our meetings, you've got time, opportunity and money. That are the three of the worst things that you could possibly have. And then obviously a professional footballer like he's been, obviously I wouldn't think he'd be on the top coin that, you know, at Town for sure, but still enough to, you know, what does it matter? Just like, be betting, I can afford it and things like that as well. And it's a serious issue, really, and that as well. I think it's sad. I mean, it's quite the first thing that I was thinking of is to do the club. Surely the club do a lot of, because I know quite a few cricketers and then they've done quite a lot of work inside the clubs with the, about gambling and things like that as well. I think it got to a stage where I know when kind of knew a few people at Yorkshire that they had to hand the phones in during games and things like that as well, because it was getting that bad. They're like people, gambling as well. But I think that's the thing, because obviously you'll get one side of the argument. People, well, you know, how stupid is that? You know, I've no sympathy for him and that as well. And obviously he had his other issues away from gambling as well. But I just find it pretty sad, to be honest with you. Now, to me, this guy needs to be in with me in the meeting tomorrow and that as well, because I just think it's to recover kind of from, like, for me, it sounds like an addiction, what he's doing and that as well. And he's obviously not helping his career. He can't have, like, your mind focused on the job 100%. This is the big thing that I found kind of recovering from like the addiction is when I wake up tomorrow and I go to work, I've focused on the job. I've focused on my friends, focused on my family, focused. I've got a clarity, a clear head. I can kind of make my own decisions. When someone's involved with that, you know, people might say, well, it's, you know, he might think it's just a little bit of, you know, something to when I get off the field. But I'm damn sure that when he comes off that field, he'll be like on his phone, right, as them bets coming. And I think when it's creeping into that territory, it's really, really bad. I was quite shocked, to be honest with you, in that as well, because obviously we've seen the Toffolo thing as well. And again, you know, I've seen a few comments about, you know, because of the mental health thing, and that were just thrown in to try and, you know, kind of get away from the punishment. But what I didn't realize that it was, you know, it was betting on teams that he was involved with and that as well. So for me, that's a bit of an issue, but obviously he shouldn't be betting at
inside,
all.
It's insider trading technically, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, obviously the most famous one in rugby league with the Sean Long thing, Tommy Martin back in the day when they knew that St. Helens were going to have like a weak team out. And obviously that was when it kind of got clamped down on them as well and stuff. But I just think, because if you want to bet enough, you'll do it. You know, to kind of work in an industry where you can kind of self-exclude and ban people from betting. But I always think there's always ways around it. You go to our meetings and, you know, you'll get people who'll relapse and then they'll be like, well, hang on a minute, you put a block on there, you put a GamStop block or you put a Gamban block. But yeah, but you can put a VPN on and kind of bet on a Chinese website and stuff like that as well. And I think if you want to bet enough and you've got a problem enough, you will always do it. So to me, it's, you know, the club going to support him. For me, the support has got to be, you know, bigger than he's got to want to, you know, because clear his head, because who knows, he might get released with Town, he might end up going down the pyramids and stuff like that as well. And what does that mean? Does that mean he can gamble? His life's just going to like kind of go into free fall and that as well. It's the same way with Toffolo. I'm quite interested. I'd love to have a chat with him actually one-on-one just to say, what are you doing about it and that as well? Oh, I've stopped gambling. What does that mean? Because to me, you've got to make a change in your life. Otherwise, you're just going to go back into that big hole and that as well, because I were ready to finish it all, Matt. I'd had enough. It got me beaten. I owed so much money, you know, couldn't pay bills. You know, my wage were going after 3 days. Was not on footballers' money and that as well. And I needed to get help to rock bottom. And some of these meetings I've gone into, like, you know, obviously it's anonymous, but there's some really high profile people that have been kind of licked by gambling. So it's just, you've seen it obviously with Toffolo, with Harriet. I mean, 4 years. It's a very secretive addiction, mate, because like if I'm an alcoholic, you can see it, can't you? I'm coming back drunk. If I'm a, you know,
I mean, we see that on Instagram, to be fair, mate.
Yeah, with like drugs and stuff like that as well. It's like, oh no, I've stopped drinking now. That's another story. But yeah, but it's very visible, drugs, alcohol, but gambling's not. So you're thinking that 4 years, how has he done that? But I can be on my phone now, Matt. And if I was still gambling, I'd be like, oh, what are you doing? You're always on your phone. You are. I'm just checking scores. I'm just WhatsApping someone. I'm just Instagramming and just be gambling. But the warning signs are there. I don't know if any of that family are watching or listening and that as well. I'd strongly urge him to get to some meetings, because to me, that's where you recover. You find, you know, that you've got to put your blocks in place and that as well. It's not a matter of just like, you know, blocking yourself from websites and things like that as well. Because someone said to me in my first meeting, says, Cozzy, what we can do here, we can write a check, because I owed well over £20,000, and I can write you a check. You know, now there you go. Your debts are cleared. You're all right now, aren't you, mate? I'm like, no, I'm not. It's just like, it's not a matter of the money, mate. It's about, you know, I'm just more concerned for the guy, really, and that as well, just knowing kind of backstories. And sadly, I've been to meetings where people haven't come back. What happened to so-and-so? Oh, he jumped off Scammerden Bridge. Did you not see that on the news? And this, that, and the other. So, yeah, just hope it's a wake-up call for him. And, yeah, I'm sure the club do a lot. And obviously, PFA do plenty of things like that as well. But I think it's just you. It's the will. You come in, you hear these meetings when people come in, oh, I'm doing it because our lass is going to chuck us out, or I'm going to lose access to my kids, when I'm going to, you know, lose my job, this, that, and the other. You've got to want to do it for yourself, mate. So for me, for Kieran, he's got to, you know, obviously with a wake-up call with the other incident and that as well. This as well, he must be feeling low. He broke in the team. He looked quite good. And now injured. I noticed he put something on his Instagram, kind of making him, you know, stronger and, you know, what don't kill you, make you stronger, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'd strongly urge him to like to come to some meetings and get help, just like the experts on that as well. It's, yeah, because it's just, you don't want your life to be peppered with that, because one, at some stage the football money is going to run out and then, you know, just get into despair. We've seen it before, haven't we? I think Delroy Fierce, didn't he have an issue? I could be wrong. Or was he got involved with some issues and stuff.
Well, let's not discuss that one, yeah. It's he went to prison, yeah. Didn't he, Dan?
Yeah, but it's, that's what I mean, where this can take you. So you might just think, well, I've got the money, and it's like, yeah, it's a ban, and I'll be back in the summer. But, mate, if you're watching, come to the meetings, sort yourself out, mate, because, like, that, there's nothing more satisfying than, you know, I couldn't do 14 minutes without a bet, and 14 years on the 15th of March. So yeah, it's dangerous, slippery slope. But yeah, sad to see, mate, to be honest with you. But it's, I think unless you're in the hole, and once you get in, everyone's got an, I think some people have got an addiction to things, but like addictive personalities is, the gambling one's so difficult, because I think my mum and dad were more shocked, because they think you know everything about you, mum and dad. And then when I told them that, like, that debt had built up on me gambling and I was ready to finish it, they were absolutely stunned. But it's something you can hide, gambling. And in a way, it'll do him good that this has come out. He might not think it now, but this will do him good, because he can, hopefully, if he can repair his life, the club are standing by him. And that's, so he's really lucky, you know, he can kind of kick on again. So, yeah, just wish him well.
14 years. Outstanding, mate. Outstanding.
Nearly. 15th of March. Got to get there, yeah.
15th of March. That's my... my missus's birthday. We'll have a double celebration.
Yeah,
killer. I don't think me or you could say anything else about that, could we? Well, you know, because he's just...
not really. It's just they are, the thing is, as a footballer, you do know you can't gamble. You're put into meetings all the time saying you can't gamble. At my very semi-pro level back in Australia, I couldn't bet on anything in any FIFA-regulated game. And I'm still registered now and I still can't. And I'm very aware of it. You get emails all the time. You get put into meetings every year about it. So it's definitely not something, it's not an accident. He's very aware that he shouldn't be doing it, because all footballers, I think it's a part of a contract as well, I think, when you sign with a football club. There's all sorts of things with it to make footballers aware. But again, it's an industry, a football industry is basically financed, not entirely, but quite a lot by gambling money. So it's hard to sit here saying, well, it's wrong, don't do it, when every second shirt sponsorship's a betting company. So it's a tough environment to live within if that's something you are predisposed to. And it's just, I feel for him, especially because obviously this is the second problem he's had with Town after the, what was it actually called? Is it hair baiting? And again, that's something not a common occurrence, that one. I can't say I've ever heard of it before until he was charged with it. And he's not a footballer that's got a background where he's bagged 20 goals 4 seasons in a row and he's going to get job opportunities everywhere. He's at the beginning of his career trying to learn his way, and this is a second incident he's had that's really going to make it more difficult for him to be a footballer. I just hope this is kind of the wake-up, and like Cozzy says, he gets the help he needs to push on. And if the club stand by him, great. There is a bit of a player in there. He's been pretty handy for us, and under Warnock last year, there were moments where he was handy, and you can see that there's something there, and I just hope it's not ruined from something outside of what we see on the football field.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the contract, but it's definitely an FA rule, isn't it? A football rule that you're not allowed to do that. I mean, I had to sign something similar as well 10 years ago. I think that's it for us, lads. It's been an enjoyable pod talking about a performance which has buoyed us somewhat. So hopefully we'll see a lot
We've
more.
We've lost by 5, but we're happy. We're weird, amazing. Weird people. Us.
I know. Absolute sadness.
We're all mad around the bend.
Right, we'll take it from there. Thank you to everyone who's joined us online. There's about 80 people still watching us talk absolute nonsense at the minute, which is phenomenal. So thank you to everyone online who's watched it. If you guys could just click the like button, that'd be fantastic, because that'd just stick our little podcast in more eyes or in front of more eyes and more Huddersfield Town fans, which would be very much appreciated. That's it for us. What do you think we should go out on? Shall we go out on an American song, or shall we just go out with the usual Smile a While? I think we'll go with Smile a While.
There's a team that is dear to its followers. The colours are bright blue and white. They're a team of renown. They're the pride of the town. And the game of football is their delight. And all the while, upon the field of play, thousands loudly cheer them on the way. Often you can hear them say, who can beat the town today? And then the bells will ring so merrily, and every goal shall be a memory. So town, play up and bring that cup back to Huddersfield. So town, play up and bring the cup back to Huddersfield.
Lads, what's your favourite 90th minute goal?
Got to be Heffley against Leeds. A shot from Moy and sliding in at the death, Michael Heffley. Great finish to the game. Shared with my family, only made better by ordering McDonald's via McDelivery afterwards. 3 points, McNugget share box, spot on. Order McDelivery now by the McDonald's app. You in.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.